With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is The Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hey, good to have your company. Hour number two. That first hour just flew, didn't it? When you bowl up a lot of subjects in a small amount of time, time tends to fly. But thank you very much for Glenn's call as well. It really has created, no doubt, some people to think carefully about what's happening in their neck of the woods, not just in another country. Paul has sent me an email as well through that news break about The Voice in Australia. With all this talk of The Voice, there's one question that is never asked. What would they do to change the outcome? It's always the rest of us having to give, but nothing ever changes, and it never will unless they change themselves. That's a very good point. From the outside, you can't change communities that don't want to change themselves or have a predilection to change. You can't do it. Think about the things that change in life involving humans. It's got to be done from the inside and the outside, not just from the outside. Paul, you make a very, very good point. Now, I'm a huge fan of English actor, comedian, screenwriter, and producer John Cleese. I've interviewed John a couple of times on radio, and I've appeared on a television panel with him once as well. We had a chat afterwards, and I found him to be affable, charming, in fact, good fun. Others he's worked with, I've noticed over the years, have a very different view of working with John Cleese, but I can only judge him from what I've personally experienced, which is probably the way it should stay. And his work on stage and in film and TV, you know it. It's iconic. And it's laugh out loud funny. He is dead set funny. Well, my esteem for John Cleese has now gone beyond the heights of extremely high because he's now refusing to adhere and bow down to the outrage mob, the cancel culturalists, who have called for a joke to be removed from an upcoming stage version of Monty Python's Life of Brian. Imagine fiddling with the Life of Brian. Sacrosanct. Now, the controversial scene in question, you may remember it from Life of Brian, features a man claiming that he's a woman and he can have a baby. But because the sensitivities of transgender people are heightened at the moment, they don't want anyone to laugh at their expense. Tell that to the Irish. We've been laughing at the expense of the Irish for a century, maybe more. Cleese is working on a stage production of Monty Python's Life of Brian, you see, which, as we all know, was a 1979 movie about a man who's mistaken for Jesus Christ. Dead set funny. Anyway. A group of actors, the actors, note well, allegedly told John Cleese that one scene would need to be cut out because it would be offensive in today's environment. Now, I would argue it would be more timely in today's environment as opposed to offensive. You be the judge, though. You be the judge and let me know on the talkback lines. Dial in from US or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026, or Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. You're the judge, all right? It features a character named Stan, who wants to become a woman and have babies. I want to be a woman, Stan declares. Now, I was going to play you the actual skit from the movie, but if you listen to it on radio, you tend to miss a few words because you're not watching it. You tend to miss some of the punchlines, so I thought I'd read it out to you, transcribe it. I want to be a woman, Stan declares. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta. Cleese's character, Reg, asked, what? Stan fires back, it's my right as a man. When asked why he wants to be a woman, Stan explains, I want to have babies. Reg replies, you want to have babies? Stan shoots back, it's every man's right to have babies if he wants them. When Reg informs Stan that he can't have babies, Stan plays the victim. Don't you oppress me? Cleese's character notes, I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box? Other characters agree that Stan can't have babies, but argue that he should have the right to have babies. Reg responds, what's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies? Another character says, it's symbolic of our struggle against depression. Reg quips that Stan has a struggle with reality for thinking he can give birth to a baby. How clever. Bravo. May he withstand the cancel culture onslaught, John Cleese. It doesn't take sides, that script. It makes ordinary observations about a not-so-ordinary demand of someone who may desire to be transgender. It's bloody funny, without offending much at all. Although my view is, humour does offend, and that's often what makes it funny. Let's surely not cancel having a laugh because we don't want to laugh at someone else's expense. Imagine how many jokes, how much comedy would be cancelled. Don't allow them to do this. John Cleese is standing up strongly. Well done. Critics claim the scene in the movie is transphobic. Oh, dear. Anyway, despite all of this outrage, according to the UK Telegraph, Cleese confirmed that he would not be removing the questionable scene from the upcoming stage show. Cleese actually wrote about this on Twitter and said, a few days ago, I spoke to an audience outside London. I told them I was adapting The Life of Brian so that we could do it as a stage show, not a musical. I said that we'd had a table reading of the latest draft in New York City a year ago, and that all the actors, several of them Tony winners, had advised me strongly to cut out the Loretta scene. I have, of course, no intention of doing so. Yahoo! Cleese slammed the media for misreporting him about cutting the Loretta scene from the new version. He said, amazingly, none of the British media called me to check. Cleese said of the actors in the upcoming production, these were absolutely top-class Broadway performers, and they were adamant that we would not get away with doing the scene in New York City. I asked them, are Python fans not going to come because we're doing a scene they've been laughing at for 40 years? What a good point. The Monty Python comedian said, producers tend to be scaredy cats, and they don't remember that the protest in New York City when Brian was released back in 1979 meant we never needed to do publicity. It created its own publicity, free publicity, no marketing budget in there. And how true is that? You can't be frightened to offend, especially if you want to tell the truth and or do comedy. Comedy does offend, although there's very little to offend in that script, surely. It's withstood the test of time and, in fact, has become way more relevant in 2023 than it was even 44 years ago. Don't you agree? Thomas Paine, the English-born American founding father, political activist, philosopher, political theorist, and revolutionary once said, he who dares not offend cannot be honest. This is TNT Radio.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's get straight to the PR queen of Australasia and multimedia news commentator, and in a past life, may I add, primetime news reporter, Prue McSween. Welcome to TNT Radio.
Hey, Smithy. You know, I was just thinking when you were talking about This Life of Brian, maybe we've got a real beef with John Cleese and his pythons, because I think they've given this crazy transgender activist mob some ideas, maybe, you know, so
yes.
Maybe he's done the wrong thing by us all.
He may have. Isn't it interesting? But we've got to have the heroes in this sphere. Like, you know, David Williamson, I know, is really, really against changing the classics, because he knows that the cancel culture mob are coming after the classics and he's standing firm. I don't know what he's politics is. I'm presume that he's left, but it's so good that someone like David Williamson, the renowned worldwide playwright, stands up to these bods, as John Cleese is doing, Prue.
Oh, 100%. That we've all got to fight and stand up against it and be loud. You know, people say to me, we're so glad you say what you do because we're too scared to. And I say, Well, why the hell are you scared? You know, you're abdicating your responsibility and allowing them to win.
Spot on. Spot on. Well, the voice to the Australian Parliament referendum has passed the House of Reps as expected today. It went 121 votes to 25. But we've been hearing many MPs this week address the Parliament on their views about this concept, Prue. One of them yesterday was Liberal MP from WA, West Australia, and former Special Forces soldier Andrew Hastie. I have enormous respect for Andrew Hastie, and I actually think he can one day lead the country. But here he is arguing against the voice. Have a listen to this.
So to be direct, I do not support Labor's voice. I think this voice is a radical departure from our parliamentary system, fundamentally changing the character of Australian governance. One of the great challenges we face in the future is governing fairly for all Australians in a society that is becoming more diverse. The great cultural consensus of the last century has evaporated. The rise of independent and minor parties is proof of that. Our democracy needs to be fair for all Australians, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of religion, regardless of gender, regardless of sexuality, regardless of origin. That's why the rule of law is central to our idea of fairness. Everyone, regardless of wealth or privilege, is equal before the law. We now see the challenge of a toxic new politics that divides people into tribes based on their identities. And I reject that politics. Instead, I want to see greater unity, cohesion and fairness in Australia. And sadly, this voice, while well-intentioned, will only entrench division.
How brilliantly articulated. He is absolutely right, Prue McSween, but most of our political leaders are all for it.
Well, they're lemmings, Smithy. You know, they're going with the flow because they're hand-wringers. They are part of a conspiracy to force us into some moral obligation and sense of fairness, that we should be changing our democracy, changing something that has stood by us for so long to favour 4% of this population. And we just cannot allow this kind of undermining of the equality of our democratic rights in this country through bullying and this moral hypocrisy. It's just appalling what this Prime Minister is doing. I think that Andrew said that this is the rise of toxic politics in this country, and that's what it's become when you have a Prime Minister of this country who's facing so many more issues. You know, we have a huge housing crisis. We have middle Australia, hardworking Australians who are being ignored, who are trying to live day by day as their belts are having to be tightened, how they're wondering how they're going to feed and clothe their kids. And we've got this Prime Minister who's just on this vanity project where he's, you know, and he's a liar. His first lie to this country was prior to the election when he said he was going to be a safe change. Nothing to see here. Vote for me. Trust me, nothing's going to change. Well, he is a liar. He's a radical socialist who had a vision to change this country in ways we could never imagine. And this is his first one, which he's so preoccupied to. He's ignoring all the other things that are much more important to the average Australian. And I just think it's so appalling that we have this situation in this country where we have a government that is going to not only change this society, but impoverish us. We are going to, with it, just even through its energy policy, that alone, let alone the empowerment he's giving to unions, the fact that employers are under attack. Everywhere you look, this government is reaching its tentacles and they're going to damage this country. God help us all, is all I can say.
We're a multiracial country. We're a multicultural country, but in the multiracial pecking order, if you're white, you're not on top. If you're black, you're on top. That is not the way a democracy should operate.
Of course it doesn't, but you've got all these fools, these moron people, morons who, you know, are called politicians, who haven't got a brain between them, I've decided. They all just feel they can puff themselves up. Thank God we've got the National Party, You know, and now, thank God, Peter Dutton's suddenly grown some. Yeah. And he's now coming out. But, you know, you have lemmings who are running this country, who social hang-readingers, who haven't got a brain to see past this vote that's going to make them feel good, inflate themselves for a short time, and then the chickens will come home to roost.
Sure will. We'll be in the High Court. It'll all be blown to smithereens. I want to take a quick break. We're going to talk about removing a Distinguished Service Cross off the Chief of the ADF. Now, that sounds quite dramatic, but it's true, and I think it's justified. We'll talk about that with Prue McSween right after a quick break. You can call us from the US or Canada, 1-888-201-6425, the UK 033-0024-1026, or Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Here's your invitation. Be part of the conversation. This is Chris Smith on TNT Radio.
Rick Munn on TNT Radio.
The city of Chicago is being hit extremely hard by the illegal immigrant crisis. Currently, the city has no available shelters left to put people in, and the police stations are being used as temporary shelters. So they're actually going to be sticking people into police stations. And with the crime rate in Chicago being so high, they're already overcrowded with criminals. So, you know, what's it going to take? What's it going to take for people to stop this and that nonsense? Okay, literally, when there's literally nowhere to put anyone, they still say the doors are open. It's mad. That's going on in Chicago. It's happening in England and, of course, Ireland. There's two hashtags trending. Ireland is full on one hand and Ireland for all on the other hand. It's fair enough saying Ireland for all, but there's nowhere to put them. The Irish people, homeless people, 10,000 don't have a place to stay. They're going to house an extra 100,000 illegals coming in. Where are you going to put them?
He's locked and loaded. Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Lorry from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
Where the story goes, we follow. Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, last week, Australian Defence Chief General Angus Campbell warned a group of serving and retired ADF members that their medals could be removed over apparent command accountability failures when alleged war crimes took place. This is a huge issue in Australia at the moment. During Senate estimates this week, One Nation Senator Malcolm Roberts questioned whether General Campbell was entitled to earn a Distinguished Service Cross himself during his time as commander of Australian forces in the Middle East because he was not on the front line. Prue McSween, it is a very good point. He's not on the front line, so you can't put him in the group of soldiers who are being investigated right now, but he'll take the credit and take the Service Cross.
Of course he will. You know, as far as I'm concerned, as the chief, he sets the culture and he sets the standards. And whether he was on the front line or not, he is just as culpable if he believes that there were some atrocities that were taking place.
You can't have it both ways, in other words.
You can't have it both ways. And what really annoys me, apart from his arrogance and his born-to-rule attitude, the contempt he showed the politicians who, quite rightly, particularly good honour, Jackie Lambie and Malcolm Roberts, you know, who gave it to him. But, you know, this man is just the epitome of what's wrong with the defence force in this country and why they cannot attract recruits anymore. Who would want to go out there, train for years, put themselves on the front line where they risk death at any moment, not have any confidence that the people above you who are sending you there will back you? And we have then this armchair critic sort of scenario where none of us who've been facing death on the front line are suddenly armchairing our critiques on whether these people have performed atrocities or not. That Afghani war was, you never knew who was your enemy. There were farmers, there were kids who would suddenly take up arms or plant incendiary devices. You know, these poor men and women who are out there who've come back with PTSD, with no limbs, all sorts of things, are suddenly being hauled over the coals and being told that they've done something wrong. How can any of us who haven't been facing that front line sit here and critique them? For God's sake.
You can't judge.
And how dare this man, treat them with so much contempt? I just find
I think that's exactly what the public thinks, Prue. They are right on your side with Angus Campbell. He's overspoken and overstepped the mark. Now, I want to talk about something that's very close to your heart. You were very keen to talk to me about this today. Calvary Health has decided overnight to mount a legal challenge to the ACT government's compulsory acquisition of the Calvary Public Hospital in Canberra. Now, the announcement came amidst a disagreement between the Archbishop of Sydney, Anthony Fisher, and the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, who, guess what, has indicated his support for the hospital takeover. It is about kicking out the tykes, the Catholics. This is bigger and a wider issue, Prue, than what it first appears, isn't it?
Oh, it really is, Smithy. Look, the thing is, just for people who aren't in this country to understand, this is a hospital, a Catholic hospital, that's been running for 44 years and it had 76 years to go in its contract. It's in the Capital Territory. It's a highly respected hospital. Anyone can go there. You don't need to be Catholic, but it has a very high standard of medical care. What this government has done, and this government is this ACT government is a Labor-leaning green government. And this is why, of course, the Prime Minister is backing them, because he's backing his union mates and his green masters, because the Greens have the hold over him. What this means is that no institution or business in this country is safe. It sets a precedent for hostile acquisitions for no reason at all. And we have governments rewriting rules to serve themselves. This is not only an attack on this hospital, it's an attack on the freedom of religion. It's an attack on business. It's an attack on the rights of a healthcare provider to care for the sick. You know, what's next? Are they going to attack now faith-based? Yeah, other hospitals who are run by, religious orders, faith-based schools, aged care homes, nursing homes, social welfare. You know, the fact that this ACT government hasn't been able to build enough hospitals, so what, it's acquiring this one? It is so appalling, and this is what's wrong with this country. You know, we are attacking business. We are attacking people who want to invest here, like energy producers. Why would you want to come here and do business in this country anymore? Because we have a government that is demonizing business, who's in this case, where we have gas suppliers, they're putting price caps on them. Japan's concerned about its sovereign risk now. Why would you want to come to this country and invest? Yeah. Because you've got a government that really you couldn't trust.
And here's another example of that. I noticed the Mining and Energy Union in Australia has today launched an advertising campaign to support the Anthony Albanese government's proposed same job, same pay laws for labour hire workers. They're all jumping on board because this is how you create a powerful block when someone needs to go out on strike. It's appalling.
That's right. That's all it is. You know, and this is a grab for membership of unions. The unions have been losing members, and this is a great way to get a funnel more of money into the door so they can then funnel it to the Labor Party. But, you know, this is an attack also on small business. When you think about it, there are a lot of contractors out there, men, women who are plumbers, carpenters, you name it, who like the fact that they can go in and out of businesses, they can set their own prices, they can work when they want to. But in this case, what they're trying to do is swallow them all up. And where does it leave the employers? You know, why would you employ anyone these days? I have to say now, you know, as someone who's been in business for decades and who's had to put my house on the line, have gone weeks because you have these big businesses you work with who pay you on 100 days, You're wondering how the hell you're going to pay your staff so you don't pay yourself for weeks. Yet everybody thinks when you're in business, you're doing so well. You are putting yourself at risk all the time. And now you've got the tentacles of this Labor government and unions trying to tell you how you can run your business and who to employ and what to pay them. It's outrageous.
It is outrageous. Now, meanwhile, Australia's pension age will rise to 67 on July the 1st this year. And they reckon that needs to increase further, new research has found, but it warns it should be gradual as France braces for more nationwide protests next week over its planned retirement age rise, but they're only going from 62 to 64. We're talking about the pension age rising to 70. It might make economic sense. It might mean that we need the revenue from tax receipts to pay for what we need in a first world country, Prue McSween. But for workers, pardon the pun, how can it ever work?
Well, as an old Sheila, I can't imagine never working again. You know, I would hate to wake up in the morning and think, what the hell am I going to do? So, you know, maybe I'm unusual, but I intend to work until I drop. But I understand there are people who don't want to do that. But the fact is that human life expectancy has increased so much. Yeah, I mean, 70 is what, the new 50?
But there are some sectors when you know, like my son is an electrician. He is not going to be able to lift the cables and scale the heights of a department building being built when he's 70 years of age.
No, but hopefully he'll be employing young people who will be able to, and he'll just take all the dough. I mean, the point is that...
And give his dad all the cream.
Exactly. But I think that, you know, working if you can, obviously we need to support the people who can't. But I think the biggest problem I see with this is that we've got an ageist situation where you can't get a job if you're over 60. No one wants to employ you. Why aren't we incentivizing employers to engage the wisdom, the life experience, the maturity and the skill set of people who are over 60, who can work? Maybe they're not in physical jobs, but, you know, they can train the younger ones. I just think that, you know, we need to really revisit this whole thing. But sadly, you know, we cannot afford it. It's an aging population. More of the population is older. So we're not going to be able to afford to pay the pensioners. But, of course, it's got to be done slowly, not like in France where they suddenly raise it so quickly that everybody's, you know, dropping their pants in horror.
Yeah, they are doing more than dropping their pants. They're setting the place on fire. Thank you so much for your time. You were brilliant today. Great to hear from you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks so much, Smithy. Have a good one.
Okay. Prue McSween, PR Queen of Australasia and multimedia commentator. Good to have on this day and talk about some of the issues that are making news. But, of course, the voice has passed the House of Reps. Are you happy about that? Are you unhappy about that? Give us a call on the talkback lines. I've got to get to some news firstly, though, a news update, in fact, on TNT Radio.
We do have some big news.
Listen up.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Uganda has clapped back at Washington after it slammed the East African nation for passing a new anti-gay bill, which includes the death penalty for aggravated homosexuality. Russia claims to have struck Ukraine's military intelligence HQ in the country's capital, and organisers of the French Open have ruled out punishing Serbian tennis great Novak Djokovic after he scribbled a message on a courtside camera declaring the breakaway region of Kosovo as the heart of Serbia.
Focused on the facts. Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Just before we talk about cyber news and technology, a couple of quick emails from our loyal listeners. One here from Alan. Alan says, Prue says The Voice will benefit just 4% of the population. Wrong, says Alan. The Voice will largely benefit the elites claiming to represent the 4% of the population. Yeah, I guess what she was meaning was that this is all supposed to benefit 4% of the population. And that sounds bizarre that you would go so far out of your way for 4% of the population. One here from Jason. Jason has sent me this email. I've heard Glenn on other radio stations. Now, Glenn was the talkback caller that spoke about this incredible transgender diversity curriculum that's being foisted onto school children in Australia and safe schools. He was talking about that. And Jason says, I've heard him get fobbed off on what he just spoke about on other radio stations. I'm with him all the way. The mayor of New Norfolk is trying to get drag queens here, that's in Tasmania, to read to children. It's way, way, way out of control and not in touch with sensible people. Isn't that interesting? You kind of think you're living in a parallel universe. That how could this be acceptable by those that we regard as civic leaders? And I just shake my head thinking, I'm living somewhere else. My head's somewhere else because these people think that this stuff is okay. No, it's not. Why foisted this stuff on children? Pick on someone with your own intellect and age. That's what I say. Not against what you want to do at all. I've been to drag events, laughed my guts out. But don't foister this stuff on kids that can't handle these concepts and think that this is normal. Come on. Yes, it's part of life, adult life, not children's lives. Okay, I want to talk to Alex Zaharoff-Reut now, who always comes with us on Wednesday with all his updated global cyber and technology news. Alex, welcome to the program once again.
G'day, Chris. How are you?
Doing very well. I can't believe it's that time already. We've got to get into our segment, otherwise we'll run out of time. Now, this fascinated me. There's a startup that has gathered $70 million in funds, and it's putting together a robot with artificial intelligence capabilities. And in many ways, Alex, you correct me if I'm wrong, this will mean the robot in some ways is smarter than you and I.
Well, to some degree, given how human-like ChatGPT-4 appears to be and how much better it's only going to get when we get to ChatGPT 4.5, 5, 6, 7. I mean, these developments are coming thick and fast. 6 months ago, no one had ever heard of ChatGPT, at least in the general public, and now it's everywhere. And Smithy, this is a Sunnyvale-based company in California called Figure. So go Figure. They're developing a robot called Figure 01. They've got $70 million there, saying that they hope to be one of the first groups to bring to market a humanoid that can actually be useful and do commercial activities. And they say that, you know, the structured, repetitive, and often dangerous tasks in the warehouses are a great potential first application. And we have seen, if you've seen those videos from Boston Dynamics of those robotic dogs and some of those other bigger robots that can do backflips and jump on things, that clearly these robots with, you know, that super strength and the cameras that can see things and easily categorize things and know where things are in warehouses could actually do really well. Now, this company has got a master plan to hope that eventually they'll, you know, their robots will be capable of performing tasks better than humans. And they do have some prototypes. But just last Sunday on Australia's 60 Minutes program on Channel 9, there's another robot that's taken the world by storm, which is called Amica, A-E-M-C-A. It's from Cornwall in the UK, from a company called Engineered Arts. And this robot has these incredibly realistic facial expressions. I mean, they're either incredible or they're incredibly creepy, if you believe in that sort of uncanny valley effect where you see things that are almost, you know, lifelike, but obviously not quite. But this robot, if you look for videos on it online and just hear it speak and see all the facial expressions it can do, it's quite amazing. And I mean, that's why it was the subject of the 60 Minutes report, that it was being interviewed, and it is also powered by ChatGPT-4. So we're going to have these really lifelike conversations with you. And there was actually a previous robot, I forget its name all of a sudden, but I interviewed the robot and its creator last decade, and that could do all sorts of cool facial expressions, but these ones are a step above.
Yeah, step above with the assistance of AI. Of course, it's all well and good to talk about the benefits of this stuff, Alex, but if it gets into the wrong hands, who knows right this second which devious empire — I know I sound like someone in a sci-fi movie, but it's true — in some devious empire is devising their own AI and setting up a series of mini robots or bots to make them money and scam the world. Who knows?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we saw, if you were in Sydney and you saw the drone show from the Vivid Light Show. And there's been a lot of these drone shows around the world. Some places actually have them instead of fireworks at the New Year. But, I mean, those drones are a type of robot. I heard someone talking the other day about undersea drones that could render a lot of these nuclear submarines useless because the oceans could be filled with these drones. And, I mean, yeah, drones are having a big effect right now in the war in Ukraine. I mean, there are good robots. You know, Elon Musk wants to also create a robot that can automate a lot of the production of the cars. And he showed a demo of this, you know, robot walking around and waving and not much else at the moment. And there's also this robot centipede. It's a robot that can sort of walk in this centipede-like way that could be used for search and rescue. So there's lots of good, just like with any tool, those tools can be used for bad. A car can plow into people, guns can kill. But those two things have also made a lot of good sense and done a lot of good things in the world over the past couple of, you know, 100 to 200 years, depending on the cars or guns.
Now, for the Apple users listening right now, we're about to hit the Worldwide Developer Conference, which is all that unveiling going on that people can drool over and maybe even imagine owning some of these new gadgets.
That's right. That's next week. I mean, next week that'll be on for us in Australia. It'll be Tuesday. For people in America, it'll still be a Monday morning. I don't know if we're going to move the show a day forward next week just to capitalize on the fact that'll be fresh news. But one of the things I wanted to talk about last week, and we just ran out of time, was, and I didn't even mention to you because there were so many things, but it was Microsoft's Build 2023 conference. Now, I've got the article up at techadvice.life with some of the keynotes there. But, you know, Microsoft wants to put AI front and center into Windows, and they're going to be launching a thing called the Windows Copilot in June as a beta version that anybody can download. And what it will do is it will put an icon on the taskbar, but it'll also have a sidebar on the side of your screen that you can interact with like a chatbot, like with ChatGPT or with Bing AI. But you can ask it to do things like, you know, you say, well, where do I find system mode? And it'll say, well, look, here it is in the settings, but do you want me to turn system mode on? So you just tap the button and bang, every app you have is automatically in dark mode. You can drag articles into the taskbar, you know, Word documents that you've worked on, and you can say, rewrite this, summarize this, simplify it for me, explain it to me. You can drag in audio recordings you've made on your phone, little voice notes you've recorded to yourself, and you can say transcribe this, so it'll instantly transcribe it into text. You don't, wow. You know, if you don't like the sound of your own voice, you can just read it. You can ask it to translate something for you. Microsoft wants it so that you don't have to open programs, open files, save things, close things. You'll just talk to Windows like it's a digital
person, personal assistant,
ask it to help you do a virtual assistant, and ask it to do things for you. And it will. And obviously, the first version will have bugs, and it won't work as well as possible. But we all know how things. How quickly things move in tech. So Microsoft wants to be the first operating system with all of this AI stuff. But I wonder now that, especially that Apple knows this, what it will be doing next week. And we'll talk about it next week, whether it's Tuesday or Wednesday. And let's also not forget that Apple doesn't always do things first. They often do things last because they like to see what all the mistakes are that everyone else has made. And then they come out and do it right. So we might not hear much about AI. We might hear a lot, but we'll find out in a week's time.
Okay, as an addict of Twitter, tell me about what Elon Musk is doing to the feature.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you have a Twitter Blue service, you can edit your tweets within 30 minutes if they're genuine tweets and not responses to other people. He's added all sorts of things. A couple of things he's added just in the last couple of days. One is the ability to watch videos at different speeds. People love to save time and they want to watch their videos at 1.2 speed, 1.5 speed, because if you're listening to a podcast, you can speed it up. Many people speak very slowly, and so you can speed it up and not miss anything. But also, Elon has made it so that you can put the video in picture mode called PIP, P-I-P, and then you can continue within the Twitter interface and look at other things in Twitter and not be stuck on a page with the video.
Love that. Now, like a window.
Like a window, yeah. Now, but the thing is, Twitter is not using the native picture-in-picture capability of the iPhone, which is where this has been launched. I think it's probably on Android as well, but I've been using it on my iPhone, and I noticed that I couldn't resize the window like you can with the native picture-in-picture playback option. There were no controls, and it's clearly, you know, it's launched. Elon is, you know, always updating things, so I'm sure he'll fix these things. And it would be better if he actually transitioned to the native picture-in-picture capability of iOS, because then you could leave Twitter altogether, go and do email or other things, but still have the video playing. So for me, the PIP is still a WIP, which stands for work in progress.
Right. He could have waited until it wasn't a work in progress, right? He could have waited until he got it right.
He could have. But I think he's using the, you know, Facebook's famous edict was to move fast and break things. You know, ask for permission, ask for forgiveness, don't ask for permission. So, yeah. You know, it's better that he's launched it. It's there. People complain. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. He moves fast. He'll fix it. He'll make it better. And look, 24 hours ago, we didn't have this feature at all. Now we've got it. It's better than nothing.
One of my favorite segments of the segment we did last week, one of my favorite sections was when we spoke about the rebirth of 35 millimeter cameras. But now you've got something that sort of fits in the same, I guess, retro sphere, which is the incredible revival of flip phones.
Yes, you know, people are so addicted to their phones that it's actually causing some people distress. There's this rise of the dumb phone with Gen Z and millennials who want to limit screen time. You know, they call themselves screenagers, and they've taken to TikTok and other platforms with a bring back flip phones hashtag. And on TikTok, this garnered 49 million views. And, you know, this relaunching of the Nokia 2660 flip phone, they actually launched it 16 years ago originally, and they launched it last year in black, but they're launching it again in pop pink and lush green. Obviously, colors aimed at young people, although anyone can get those phones and stand out. And so it's got this updated look. You know, there are millions of Nokia feature phones sold globally. In fact, the sales from 2021 to 2022 of these dumb phones actually doubled last year from the year before. And Nokia expects further growth in 2023 as people unplug from their smartphones.
How does that happen? Like when phones first came out, we had flip phones. I had a flip phone. I think it was a Nokia. Started with M. What was it?
Motorola.
Motorola, right? I had a Motorola flip phone, but it sort of was one movement too slow for me. I just needed it open and hit the buttons. But why would it come back like it is at the moment?
Because people want to go back to basics. They don't have to convert to their flip phone permanently. You can pull the SIM card out from your, you know, fancy Android or iPhone and stick it into your flip phone and then detox. Some research from HMD Global, which is the company behind the resurgence of Nokia-branded phones, they said that 4 in 10 Aussies do a digital detox for as long as 26 days a year. So people are choosing, when they know they've got to get work done, you know, you can turn your current Android or iPhone into black and white mode. You can put it into a focus mode. But sometimes that's just too much of a temptation. So if you actually pull the SIM out and stick it into one of these flip phones, or you want to go on a night out and not have your expensive phone get lost or damaged or dropped, you know, these flip phones, they have batteries for days. They do all the basic tasks. They still have things like Facebook and Google Maps if you need them. I mean, obviously, the experience is nowhere near as smooth and as friendly as on your Galaxy or iPhone device. But, you know, they have upgraded these flip phones to be sort of a bit smarter. But they're still relatively dumb, and also they're like $120 Australian, so they're pretty cheap. It's you can definitely impulse buy it. You know, you can bask in the retroness of the times with, you know, a flip phone, and then when you want to go back to your main phone, you just pop the SIM back in and off you go.
Okay, I've got two other subjects I want to get to you with, but I've got to take a quick break. I'll come back to Alex in just a second. Now, why not give TNT Radio a follow on some of the platforms, social media platforms you follow? We're on all the major platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, Getter. Just have a look for TNT Radio. It'll pop up. And then follow us. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I'm still waiting for the big UK heat wave. Now, every Monday or Tuesday for the last, two or three weeks, I've been sort of ripping on some of the reports of the big heat wave coming for the UK. So here it is Tuesday, I'm looking at London, and no temperature the next 10 days on the European computer model is over 21 C. Now granted, it's going to get warmer than normal, 2 to 3 C warmer than normal, in Ireland and on into the western part of the UK. But that's nice summer weather. I know a lot of people who like it a little bit warmer than normal in places where it's normally not that hot. And people do like warm weather. The thing is, they're trying to whip up the kind of hysteria that we knew was coming last year with the heat last year. You can see that as plain as the nose on my Italian face, which is probably a good thing you're not seeing my face now. Bad enough you're hearing my voice. Oh, here's the other thing. The Arctic, in 65 years of record, north of 80 degrees north, is having their coldest May on record, and not by just a little bit. Anybody saying anything about that? Of course not. But I am, because I'm the TNT climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi, and I enjoy the weather because it's the only weather I got.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me?
Join me and help fight for them by supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America.
They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Where the story goes, we follow. Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
As is always the case, you are invited to be part of the conversation. As a matter of fact, when Alex is on, you're invited to ask a question. If you've got a question about technology or cyberspace or artificial intelligence or some of the new gadgets you've just heard about and some of the concerns you have about artificial intelligence, which we'll talk about in just a second, give us a call on the talkback numbers from the United States or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. Or from Australia and New Zealand, dial 1-800-670-310. Alex, WhatsApp. Now, tell me about correcting or editing messages after you send them on WhatsApp.
Yeah, well, as you know, sometimes you make a mistake, you notice it afterwards. After you've hit send, it's always after you hit send, then your eyes, you know, land on the spelling mistake, or maybe you've sent the message to the wrong person, or you sent something you regret at 2 a.m. and you wish you hadn't sent it. Isn't there some way of deleting it? Or now, being able to delete messages on some platforms has been around, but editing something is something that we saw with Apple's Messages platform last year, and it's been very handy. There's a very funny ad where there's this guy, very strange-looking guy, but he's looking after somebody's lizard, and the lizard is on its back, and he thinks the lizard is dead, and he sends the message, oh, the lizard is dead. And just as he hits send, all of a sudden, the lizard jumps into life and startles him, and he quickly rushes to delete the message. It's a really funny ad. But WhatsApp is now getting this facility as well. Now, it's not on all people's WhatsApp yet. They sort of take time to roll it out globally over the next few weeks, but they'll allow users to edit their messages up to 15 minutes after they've been sent. So this, you know, gives you the ability to rectify misspellings or add extra additional context or content or just change their mind. So it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of other messaging programs have it and WhatsApp not have it, and they're bringing it, and it's a good thing.
As a person who writes every day and has written every day of his life, working life anyway, that is, you know, 10 scripts a day or 10 sets of notes a day or whatever I've done, I've always noticed how many mistakes there are, and you cannot trust what you write. This is a wonderful feature and people should take this up and use it. Fantastic. Now, one last one, and this goes back to the conversation or the question I asked you about 15 minutes ago. Top artificial intelligence scientists themselves are warning of the risk of extinction from AI. What are they saying?
Well, this actually dovetails really nicely with the Washington Post article questioning how, you know, ChatGPT keeps making these errors and hallucinates and wondering if it's never be fixed. But that's separate to the Center for AI Safety, with these top AI scientists warning that. And they basically have said that, you know, they've got one single succinct statement which aims to overcome the obstacle of how to voice concerns about some of advanced AI's most severe risks. And they say mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside other societal scale risks such as pandemics and nuclear war. So if you go to safe.ai, you can read about this there for yourself. But, you know, there's lots of scientists who are getting together, a historical coalition of our experts, warning that you know, this is a problem. And the statement affirms, they say, a glowing public sentiment with a recent poll showing that 61% of Americans believe that AI threatens humanity's future. Now, it's up to us as users, it's up to the creators of AI, it's up to the regulators of AI to make sure that we have AI ethics. I mean, Microsoft in their big Build 2023 was talking about the need for responsible AI. Google is talking about it. But we need more than just people talking about it. We need something like Asimov's three laws of robotics to put in place some sort of strict guidelines to make sure that AI stays within this safe zone and doesn't want to kill us like Terminators. And, you know, we have to wonder how other countries, you know, China and North Korea and anybody else that is working in this is also going to abide by those regulations. Because just like the good guys can be using AI to defend us, the bad guys, the hackers who are trying to break into our systems can be using AI against us. And this
that's
is a new
why
tool.
My argument would be very careful of regulation, rules and laws to prevent this, because while the bad guys, as you describe them, are advanced in their creation of AI, the good guys end up following the rules and are not equipped to fight the bad guys, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Yeah. Well, regulation is dangerous too. We've seen that time and time again, and we've seen the unintended consequences that government regulations have all the time. So, I mean, I'm torn. You know, how do we make sure that, AI stays on the light side of the force? And I guess the answer is we can't be sure. You know, we just have to be working on it, developing it as quickly as possible, putting whatever guardrails we can put in that help us to, you know, the good AI to defeat the bad AI, and, I don't know, hope for the best. But you know, expect the worst, but always work towards whatever the best case scenario is. And AI is here to stay. It's not going away. No matter how many scientists write letters, AI is here
to stay. It's here to stay. You can't stop this development. Alex Zaharoff-Reut, fabulous to have you on the program as usual. We'll catch up next week.
Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Thank you, mate. Fantastic. Stacks of really good information from Alex there. But it is a worry, this artificial intelligence. And you know why it's more of a worry? Is because it's coming from those who are in the sector, those that are scientifically developing this stuff. They're the ones that are coming out publicly and saying, well, I'm in it. I know what it's capable of. It is danger, danger, park ranger. And it's not outsiders who won't jump on the train. These are insiders telling us all about this. You know, overnight, I received something on social media from one of the listeners, Roland, about how his world in Australia is falling down around him. And I said before that it seems as if our leaders are in a parallel universe, very separate to the universe that we expect. And Roland had written me something. RIP Australia, you were too soft. You raised the cost of living so high that both parents are always at work rather than spending time with their children. You took God out of schools. Parents were told, no, you can't discipline your kids. Well, Australia, you shall reap what you sow, and we have lost a whole generation and turned them into rude, selfish, disrespectful brats who have no respect for people, property, or authority. You deem people with terminal illnesses and some with only a few months to live fit for work. You allow our veterans of war to go homeless and hungry, but you give out millions to foreign aid. You stop people's entitlement to welfare benefits, thus leaving them so desperate that they commit suicide. You bend over backwards to be politically correct, too scared to say enough is enough in case you offend. You put the retirement age up so people must work until they drop. People depend on handouts and food banks whilst we give aid to others. Our retired generation rely on inadequate state pensions. Their thanks for working hard. Things need to change now. And then at the end it says, please share if you agree. I haven't had a chance to share, except I have shared with my audience here at TNT. Very interesting. And full points to Larry Perkins, the race car driver. You know Larry Perkins? He says he will renounce his membership of Motorsport Australia in protest against its public support of the Indigenous voice to Parliament. So many people in sporting codes around Australia should be doing exactly what Larry Perkins has done in the last 24 hours. Australians are set to head to the polls, as you know, for the referendum later this year. Perkins is incensed that the organisation, Motorsport Australia, has taken a partisan position. Did they go and poll their members? I bet they didn't. But Motorsport Australia has joined the vast number of other sporting bodies, such as the AFL, the Australian Rugby League, etc., in stating its support. This is not about supporting the health and the safety and future prospects of Aborigines. It's not about that. It's about the model that they have put in place. which is unworkable. It's unwieldy. It's unnecessary. It repeats what we've done in history, which has not worked in Australia. So Perkins is incensed. He said Motorsport Australia under the president and CEO have got no right to suggest to anyone that Motorsport Australia thinks a particular way. I don't mind them supporting a referendum, but you can't take sides on this. He's so right. We'll obviously talk about that further in shows ahead. I've got to get out of here. Dean Macken is coming up next. He'll take you through what is the afternoon in Australia and elsewhere, the morning and overnight. I look forward to your company at the same time tomorrow. This is Chris Smith on TNT Radio.